ఓమజ్ఞాంతి నిరంగస్య జ్ఞానం గల శలాతాయ చక్షురు మిలితం యేన తస్మై శ్రీయే నమః. జై శ్రీకృష్ణ చైతన్య ప్రభు నిత్యానంద శ్రీ అద్వైత గదాధర శివ సది గౌర భక్తవృంద. హరే కృష్ణ 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 హరే హరే, హరే రామ 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 హరే హరే. ఓకే, యు కెన్ స్టార్ట్ నౌ.
Okay. Jai Advait Swami. Srila Prabhupada said, suppose a man is walking down the street and he sees a stick, is it worth anything? No, Prabhupada, it's not worth anything. And that man walks on and he sees some wire, is it a very valuable thing? No, Prabhupada. And he goes on and he sees some gourd, is it a very valuable thing? No, Prabhupada. Then Prabhupada said, yes, but an intelligent man, he fixes the stick on the gourd, attaches the wire and makes it a musical instrument. Similarly, I picked up all you American and European boys and girls.
Okay, yeah, so here, wonderful analogy by Prabhupada that how he has picked up everyone and now it is producing a wonderful music. So, acha, by the way, I just wanted to share very good news. Are you all able to hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay, yeah. Aritra and Swati Matari, you are able to hear, no?
Yeah.
Okay, for our Srila Prabhupada Leela class, next month, we'll be very fortunate to have His Holiness Giriraj Swami Maharaj to join our Sangha. And he will be addressing us on this topic. Although he told me that he would like to answer questions if devotees have any. So I think topic and all that will be decided. But he asked for joining on 13th or 14th, Saturday or Sunday. I told him that we are having this class on Saturday or Sunday. So either on 13th or 14th, he's willing to join. He's able to join. So it will be our great honor and privilege to have him. In fact, I think this is the first time that I'm inviting some Prabhupada disciple. Although it was in the back of my mind since a long time to invite Prabhupada disciples, but somehow because we had the CC class going on, so I just felt disconnected to invite someone. But now, because we have this Leela class, and I think, you know, he's one of the best devotee to answer, to address this topic. I think we'll have to set up something, maybe a Zoom facility or maybe something else. I don't know if Zoom is allowed in India, because today I read an article
Zoom is banned.
That the Supreme Court has banned Zoom in India. I'm not sure how much that is followed by our Indian people or how much it is put into practice. But I think we have to make sure that Zoom, whether it is working or not, we have to be ready with everything. In fact, we'll be preparing flyers also, and we'll be inviting many others also. Zoom, yeah, it may be working. But today only it was working. Yeah, it may be working. But because I read that article, they mentioned that Supreme Court has banned it. So now maybe after a few days or maybe after a week, If this is really true, then Zoom might not work. So we just have to keep a track of it. And we will be inviting many devotees also, not from our group only, but from outside also. And I think many, many devotees will join just because Giriraj Maharaj will be there. So we have to make sure that we coordinate, organize everything properly. And I would definitely want the help of Aritra to organize this, because currently Maharaj is in Los Angeles, I think, so or in the, at least in the West Coast. Probably that coordination aspect will be done, because we'll have to do the testing and everything also. So, and the most important reason is that why I am asking Aritra to get involved in this, because if there is an internet connection problem in my house, then I will not be able to connect properly when Maharaj will be present. Okay, so I want that Maharaj should speak uninterruptedly and should not have any problem. We should not come up with any issues that time. So we have to manage, organize in such a way that Maharaj can continuously speak. Okay, and I think the class, I would request him if he can speak for about 1.5 hours at least. But I think, you know, if he has some limitations, then maybe he can at least speak for 1 hour. So, yeah, so hopefully, you know, we are very excited and enthused to have his association. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, next article.
Next is on 5th May, right?
Oh, yeah.
From Back to Godhead, if you read that, Kalakant Das Singh.
Oh, you can, which one you're talking? No, you can skip that. That's about Jain and Prabhu's Godhead Prison.
Okay. Okay, Jain and Prabhu, okay, that's not there.
8 May, you can go to 8 May now. Vaisheshika Prabhu.
Oh, Vaisheshika Prabhu.
Vaisheshika, okay. Yes, Vaisheshika. I first met Srila Prabhupada in San Francisco in 1974. When I joined in 1973, I washed pots for a while and then became part of the San Francisco book distribution team. In 1973, Prabhupada started emphasizing how everyone should distribute books. In lectures in Los Angeles, Srila Prabhupada said, Sarvag visargo janataga viplavo yasmin prati shlokam abhagyavati api namami anantasya yasho niktaniyat chinvanti gayanti grinanti sadhava. For someone to come in touch with the Bhagavad is not an ordinary thing. The Bhagavad is so powerful that if they read one word or one line, or even if they touch the book, their life will change. By seeing Srila Prabhupada's demeanor, by hearing the sweetness of his voice, by being taken up in his energy, he instilled in young people, some who are just walking in the door, faith in his books. Armies of devotees were distributing books. When Srila Prabhupada was in his room in San Francisco, our temple president, Bhaktadas, introduced some of us to Srila Prabhupada. Bhaktadas said, these are the book distributors. They're sacrificing so much to go out and sell your books every day, and they're selling so many books. We were listening, thinking, oh, this is nice. Srila Prabhupada said, you must also read the books. And he preached for 20 minutes about how he wanted every one of his disciples to take full advantage of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Every word, he said, I translated from Sanskrit into English. I painstakingly translated these books for your benefit because I want you all to become pure devotees. At that time, I could see that Srila Prabhupada's real interest was for us to be completely serious about Krishna consciousness and to take full advantage of the process of Krishna consciousness. I've always been inspired that although Prabhupada is pushing book distribution and it is very pleasing to him, he wants us to take advantage of everything he's given us. Srila Prabhupada wants us to take the process seriously and come to the highest platform of Krishna consciousness.
Yeah, so again, Prabhupada is actually stressing on book distribution. See, one thing is clear that Prabhupada, if you want Prabhupada's blessing, then there is one short way to get his blessings or mercy, and that is through book distribution. There are other ways also, obviously, you can get Prabhupada's mercy, which you can say that, okay, just by serving Prabhupada's mission in any form, you can get his mercy. But here I am specially referring to the other forms, like trying to advance to the higher stages, and that's the only goal of a devotee, or to focus on the internal aspect of devotion only and not to externalize what we are internalizing. So if these things are there, then there is a doubt, or maybe we are not sure if Prabhupada will approve or not. But when it comes to preaching Krishna consciousness in any form, in any way, I think Prabhupada was 100% pleased. And especially book distribution, there is no question of, there is not even a tinge of doubt whether Prabhupada will be pleased or not. So these activities are very straightforward activities. They are definitely going to please Prabhupada. But at the same time, it is very clear, Prabhupada wanted both internal and external cultivation. He was not just emphasizing on doing service, but he also wanted us to become pure devotees, as he is mentioning here. And that means we have to also internalize our own Krishna consciousness, which means that we have to develop, we have to improve our faith, we have to get absorbed more and more, and we have to cultivate purity. And we know that purity is the force to preach. Okay, so Prabhupada made it very clear when Prabhupada was asked about book distribution, how they can increase. Prabhupada very clearly said that chant 16 rounds at one stretch. That is the key to increase my book distribution. And then obviously Prabhupada also said that sadhana or purity is the force. So we have to balance these things together. We cannot ignore or overlook one of them. I just recently heard from Mahatma Prabhu's class, he was mentioning this point, the same point. So he was mentioning that when they were with Prabhupada, the entire goal was to actually please him externally, in the sense that they just want to achieve for Prabhupada. They wanted to achieve many things for Prabhupada's pleasure. So the only goal was to please Prabhupada externally. And obviously internally they were following, many devotees were following Prabhupada's instructions on an internal level, which means regulative principles and chanting 16 rounds. But later on we see that these disciples who did not chant 16 rounds, they left Krishna consciousness, or they were not able to practice KC for a long time. Okay, so when we talk about instructions of Prabhupada, it is both. It is not just the external aspect or the emphasis, but it is also the internal emphasis. And both should go parallel, both should go together. So Prabhupada has made different statements at different times. Now, it is also true that loyalty is most important element in our devotional service. That is the most important. Even if you are able to follow the regulative principles strictly, and if you are able to chant 16 rounds, but if you become disrespect to your guru, or disloyal to your guru, then everything is finished. Because it's Prabhupada actually who has created the mercy, who has given the mercy, and he is also responsible for taking the disciple back to Godhead. So without establishing that connection with Prabhupada, even though you may be doing certain things, but it's extremely difficult to go back to Godhead. It's not so easy. So we have to remember one thing, that Prabhupada's instruction should be followed in every way, you know, every possible way, that whatever he has emphasized, he has not just emphasized the external activities, but he has also emphasized internal activities. Okay, and I think that this is also one of the reasons why Vaisheshika Prabhu is actually the most prominent book distributor in our ISKCON now. Everyone says that he's the Acharya of book distribution, incarnation of book distribution. So why and why he's able to maintain it? Not just maintain it, but with full vigor, you know, and enthusiasm, he's able to distribute the books for a long time, such a long period. So, you know, it's extremely difficult for someone to continue this service for 40 years. So generally what will happen, devotees will not be able to distribute books for a long time because the enthusiasm will go down. But the enthusiasm will only come when we have strong sadhana. Without a strong sadhana, there is no question of to maintain something for a long period of time. Not just maintain, but also expand it. So Mahatma Prabhu was mentioning that in the earlier days, we were overlooking and neglecting the internal part of Krishna consciousness. But after Prabhupada left, and as we matured in our Krishna consciousness, we have seen this, that it is actually best to focus on both things together and not neglect either of these things. So not just focus on external seva, but also to focus on internal cultivation. And it is obvious, you know, the more purity you have, the more you will be able to preach also effectively. So it is like compatible. In fact, if someone is only focusing on purity, cultivating purity, then also there is some lacking, because that purity is not realized into action and it is not tested also. So you know, just theoretical purity will not be able to understand how we are advancing. Okay, so when you try to focus internally, it becomes a part of sadhana. But and then when you preach also, or when you serve also externally, then that service will also have effect on the sadhana. In other words, that service will also become sadhana, and the sadhana can also become service. So they are both mutually inclusive, not exclusive. They are actually related to each other. They are not separate. They are always together. That is the reason Bhaktivinoda Thakur also said that Namruchi Vaishnava Seva Jeev Daya. He has incorporated these three forms of devotional service. He did not just mention about Namruchi. He did not just say Namruchi Vaishnava Seva, but he also said Jeev Daya. Because by default, a Vaishnava is supposed to be compassionate. And a Vaishnava is supposed to be the servant of others. So obviously, when we talk about Namruchi, we're talking about a devotee. Then devotee, they have to serve other devotees, and they have to also bestow compassion. Right? So the ISKCON way or method or the standard is that we follow Prabhupada's basics, and that is the first priority, which is 16 rounds, obviously as attentive as possible, because that is our main bhajan. So when we get absorbed in that 16 rounds of chanting, that will have influence of other activities also. Okay, and along with that chanting, obviously hearing, reading is also part. So when we have this strong sadhana, then we do prachar. Okay, that, and you know, one of the reasons Mahaprabhu also glorified Haridas Thakur is he was exemplary both in both ways, not just his internal cultivation, but also, you know, by giving compassion to others. So when we preach, that preaching is a service, but that service will cause our sadhana to increase, or the sadhana will become more pure, because Chaitanya Mahaprabhu will bestow his mercy. So the sadhana level will be raised through that. And that's why I'm saying that service can also become sadhana, because they both go parallel. They assist each other. Okay. And the same sadhana will also become service, because through that sadhana you are able to render the best service. So it can also become the service. Right? So this is the approach we have in ISKCON. In other organizations, they focus more on internal aspects. Okay, and they neglect the external thing. But it has to be balanced approach. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself was actually the manifestation of both the things. Or any acharya you see, they were all manifesting all these. Now obviously, one may say that, what about Gaurakishore Das Babaji and what about Bhaktivinoda Thakur? Obviously, Bhaktivinoda Thakur had preached earlier, then he took Babaji Vesh. But then what about Jagannath Das Babaji and what about other devotees? I will tell you one thing, that you know, Bhajanandi is a principle where you are also compassionate, where you are also preaching by your own example. See, the intention and the goal is to preach and serve. And that is common in a Bhajanandi and Goshtanandi as well. There is no difference. The difference is that Bhajanandi just will sit at one place. He will not travel. But it's not necessary that the Bhajanandi does not have compassion. In fact, Bhajanandi, like for example, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, you know, like Prabhupada has, you know, given, transferred the credit to Bhaktivinoda Thakur when he was asked, what is the success of your preaching? And then Prabhupada said that if Bhaktivinoda Thakur wanted, he could have made the entire world Krishna conscious, but he left the work for me. Okay. Another time, you know, when Bhaktivinoda Thakur was in Jagannath Puri, he was chanting the holy name, and he was repenting that he is not going out preaching and he's just doing some bhajan. So then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he had a vision from Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and Mahaprabhu told him that through your chanting, the entire world will become Krishna conscious. So that kind of although they are bhajanandis, but they have the highest compassion for the living entities. And even if they are not doing it externally, but internally, because of their strength and purity, they desire to do it. So as Srila Prabhupada says, that he left it for me. And the same thing applies to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu also. If Mahaprabhu had preached all over the world, then there was no scope of spreading Krishna consciousness. So he has given all the devotees the opportunity. So through Srila Prabhupada, who is the first step, obviously it started with Bhaktivinoda Thakur's conception, and then Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati expanded in India. And then Prabhupada obviously did spread in the entire world. But we say that entire world, but definitely we know that it's not spread in the entire world. We when we talk about different areas in different cities, villages, towns, obviously we can see that there is a lot of need of spreading Krishna consciousness. What Prabhupada did is basically on a basic platform. He has created the foundation for spreading Krishna consciousness outside India. But now if it wants to reach every nook and corner of the world, then obviously Prabhupada has given all the devotees a chance. Okay, he has given us the chance, and we can just become instruments and we can take the credit. Okay, so this is actually this is also the mercy of Prabhupada. Prabhupada wanted, he could have also done the same thing. He could have made the entire world Krishna conscious, but he has given the chance to us now. So we take the credit, we become instruments, and then we also spread it. That way, both things actually can run on the same parallel track. And we can also attain the same types of advancement and the realizations that we attain in all these higher stages. Okay, so these stages will also come when we follow Prabhupada's instruction and when we try our best to spread Krishna consciousness. Okay, so is that clear? Any comment or question on this?
No problem.
Okay, you can continue. Next article.
Is it okay? This is the last letter I read. Maybe then I'll read this one, and then maybe someone else can read.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. So that's Sakshi. When Kirtan was over, Prabhupada said the train when he prayed, and he told us, it is very nice that tonight we have with us these two Prabhus, indicating the Gaunitai deities. There is a very nice song, can you please follow me? And Prabhupada started to sing Lochandas Thakur's very beautiful song, Paramakaruna Pahudi Jana Nisai Gaur Chandra Sabhavatar Sarashiramani Keval Ananda Sanda. But when Prabhupada said the first two words, Parama Karuna, his voice choked and he couldn't sing anymore. He closed his eyes and put his head back on the Vyasasana, and we saw tears gliding down his lotus face. The room was completely silent. I don't know how long that lasted, but it was like an eternal moment entered the temple room. Everything was still in ecstasy, watching the pure devotee have such a wonderful experience of his love for God Nithai. Then gradually Prabhupada came back to external consciousness, although he was still affected by spiritual emotions. And he said, Parama Karuna, so merciful. In this dark age of Kali Yuga, if Krishna incarnated to kill the demons, practically nobody would be left. In Kali Yuga, the demonic spirit and the devotee spirit is in the same body. So Lord Chaitanya didn't kill demons, he killed the demonic spirit by the Sankirtan movement, and by the Association of Devotees. At the end, he said, "You are very fortunate. Now you must make others fortunate too. If you chant 15 rounds, follow the four aggregate principles and preach, I assure you in this same lifetime, you will see Krishna face to face." Some people may say, well, generally it takes more than one lifetime to see Krishna face to face. But because Prabhupada made that promise, Krishna will surely have to make Prabhupada's words come true.
Goal. Jai Prabhupada. Yeah, so this Prabhupada has given assurance that we'll see Krishna face to face. If you are following 16 rounds, following regulative principle, chanting 16 rounds and preaching. Yeah. So, yeah, this is the simplest way to go back to Godhead. I mean, you know, we just may have to make sure that we don't commit offenses. Okay, and if you are following, I think if we just spend at least 75% of our lifetime in the service of Lord, then definitely we'll go back to Godhead. So, because of Prabhupada's mercy. So, Prabhupada has given, he has actually boiled down the compassion level to a very, very low degree. He has made that adjustment for us. So this is very interesting. Now see, theoretically speaking, it is observed that without prema, one cannot go back to Godhead. And we also know from Prabhupada's books. In fact, it's very interesting to know, when Jayanand Prabhu passed away, Prabhupada wrote to him that if you had any material desires, then maybe you will just take another birth in an aristocratic family or in a brahmana's house. And or you know, I think he also mentioned that you will enjoy for a long time and then you will also take birth in an aristocratic family. That is what he wrote to Jayanand Prabhu. And then the next letter, I think he wrote that because you know you were selfless, that's why you have gone to Vaikuntha. So Prabhupada gave two answers to him in his letter, and he expressed both the ideas. So we can see here that one thing according to Shastra, and when Prabhupada repeated the same thing, he said and he made sure that we know that even if we have tinge of material desire, Prabhupada said one time that if you have tinge of material desire, we have to come back to the material. We cannot go back to Godhead. So we have to be 100% purified. Prabhupada said like that. Okay, but here he is saying that you just follow this and I will assure you see Krishna face to face. So Prabhupada has given a lot of instructions like these, and we see that, you know, when it is in the books, it is more theoretical, and obviously it is supposed to be theoretical. Let's assume that, you know, during this lockdown condition, if government gave more practical guidelines in the, you know, in the guideline manuals, if they gave more practical things in the guideline, which they are publishing, you know, after the lockdown, then what would have happened? See, now when the guidelines are very strong, when they are very strict, even after that, people, they do not follow it as strictly as it is given in the guideline. They will not follow that standard. And it is assumed that people will break that standard to some degree. So you cannot, when you are writing something in the books or when you are, you know, presenting, you cannot make adjustment in that. But when it comes to a practical level, then Prabhupada has actually very clearly stated things like this. He never meant, I don't remember Prabhupada mentioned that without attaining prema, without undergoing these stages, you cannot go back to Godhead. Hardly, I think, you know, we have read something like that. Mostly you will see, 99% you will see that Prabhupada said something about going back to Godhead by serving in the mission, like that, okay. So we see that practical standard is definitely lower than the theoretical standard. And this is the reason we have to read, understand Prabhupada Leelas also. And you will be surprised and you will be shocked to know what else, you know, many articles I have shared recently. And when you go through it, you will be actually surprised to know what is happening here. You know, Prabhupada is making so many adjustments. So in theory, he may be setting big standards, but in practicality, these standards are also adjusted. Okay? So any question or comment on this? Okay, Aritra, are you there? Can you read now?
Yeah. 1 minute. Yeah, sorry, I just lost that part. I'm going back. The date is?
Yeah, 8 of May.
Okay, 8 of May. Yeah. So, Rajendra Nandan, that one, right?
No, this is Shankar.
Shankar Prabhu. Yeah. In a room conversation in 1976, I asked Srila Prabhupada, when you offer flowers to Krishna or to your spiritual master, what benefit do the flowers get? Wow, that's a good question. Srila Prabhupada replied, the plant the flower came from becomes a human being in its next life. So, my Sankirtan began.
Yeah, so anything connected to the spiritual master or Krishna, definitely they will get Sukriti and they will advance. One time one disciple had asked Prabhupada that, what if I remember you at the time of death instead of remembering Krishna? What destination will I get? Prabhupada said you will get the same destination because the spiritual master is representing Krishna. So remembering Krishna or Krishna's devotees or paraphernalia at the time of death is as equal as remembering Krishna. Okay. So definitely, whatever comes in contact with a pure devotee, they all will attain Sukriti. They will all advance. Okay, next.
Rasa Leela. My initiation. Oh, by the way, one question though. It's a little off the topic, but Shankar, yeah. Shankaras. Is the same Shankaras Prabhu who is in Alachua, who is in charge of cooking? I don't know if you're aware.
Yeah, He's Prabhupada's disciple who was in charge in cooking, and I think he was also in Jew temple for some time, and then later on, maybe he's probably in Alachua now.
Yeah. I have interacted with him. Okay.
Oh, okay. So you can ask him, you know.
My
next question.
I mean, when I see him, I don't know in how many months that will happen. Okay. Rasalila. My initiation was a wonderful moment. It was one of those moments that Shruta Kirti describes when you are so bewildered, you can't remember even your own name. To be in front of Srila Prabhupada for the first time was that kind of a feeling. The devotees in New Vrindavan had put Prabhupada's Vyasasana on a landing about halfway up the stairs leading to Kirtananda's cavern. To get your beads from Prabhupada, you had to climb up those stairs. It was dramatic. It was very dramatic. The moment was so awesome, you felt like you were climbing Mount Sumeru. The night before, my husband, Narada Muni Prabhu, had jokingly said, and you better get a nice name from Srila Prabhupada. I said, well, yeah, I hope so. I'll try. What can I say? So when I went to get my beads, the sound system was reverberating and I could barely hear His Divine Grace's words. Besides that, I was practically stunned anyway. I thought I heard Him say that my name was Rasalila, but I wasn't sure. I heard all the devotees gasping and cheering. In those days, we were studying Krishna book intensely and we had contests and quizzes about it. When Prabhupada spoke my name, I experienced what He describes about the gopis during the Rasa Leela, that as they sang and danced, their movements, their smiling, their clothes, their earrings and their hair with flowers combined together to appear like clouds, snow, thunder and lightning. The passage flashed through my mind. When He said my name, it was an experiential moment. Even though I wasn't positive what He had said, that was what I experienced. I walked down the stairs, stunned, and asked someone, what did Prabhupada say my name is? It was incredible. In one moment, Prabhupada can reveal the spiritual world to you. That is His potency. Prabhupada ki jai.
noise disturbance is there. So see, this is how Prabhupada can show the devotee the entire spiritual world in a flash of movement. So this is the reason why I shared Mataji realization that when Prabhupada gave her the name Rasleela, the pastime of Rasleela actually kind of appeared in her mind, and she felt like, you know, she has seen that pastime. So this is the mercy of a pure devotee. When disciples were in Vrindavan, that time Prabhupada asked the disciples that, how do you like Vrindavan? And, you know, disciples said, we like it very much. And then Prabhupada said, so it's yours now. You know, so Prabhupada immediately, so Deen Bandhu Prabhu is sharing that when Prabhupada said, so Vrindavan is yours now, we felt that, you know, Prabhupada can give Vrindavan in an instant to us. It is like Prabhupada was so potent, so he could have, he can actually give us everything. And I also remember one particular instant of Radhanath Maharaj, when he was describing his experience in New Vrindavan. That time, I have shared this earlier, but I will repeat it because it is also connected to the context. So Maharaj had a very hectic service in New Vrindavan, and he also used to sleep for like 3 to 4 hours in a day, because he was the pujari, and he used to cook a lot of preparations for Vrindavan Chandra, and at the same time he also wanted to read Prabhupada books very thoroughly. So whatever time he was getting, he was investing all of that time in reading Prabhupada books. And because he was sleeping very less, so he used to walk every day and he used to read Prabhupada books so that he does not fall asleep. So Maharaj, hectic was extremely intense in New Vrindavan. Many years he has spent like that. And a lot of austerities also. He used to bathe himself with ice water because there were problems. Water was not available easily. So he used to actually, you know, bathe himself with ice water. He used to break the ice and then he used to bathe himself like that. So that time Maharaj was undergoing a lot of austerities. He was doing a lot of seva, very focused, very determined, and very intensely is doing. So one particular incident he shared, and he said that one time when I fall asleep, I had a dream. And in that dream, I saw Prabhupada and I saw Vrindavan. So basically, Prabhupada was in Vrindavan, and then Prabhupada was looking at me and he was calling me. And he was telling me, come, come, come with me. I will show you Vrindavan. And so then Prabhupada went to, he was taking Maharaj around the 12 forests of Vrindavan, and he was showing all these 12 forests. And then Prabhupada was saying, so this, here what happened, Krishna, what pastime he did here, this is what Krishna did here. And he also described about the pastimes of the Lord. So Prabhupada was practically guiding, and he was actually enlightening Maharaj about different pastime places of Krishna. And so then after showing everything, Prabhupada just laughed at Maharaj. And as soon as he was laughing, the dream got over. Maharaj woke up. And then he realized that how the spiritual master reveals Vrindavan to us. You know, it is not something artificial. Actually, the spiritual master takes us and he will show us Vrindavan. He will reveal us Vrindavan through this process. So because we know that, you know, Dham is actually revealed by by Shravanam. It is not, Dham is not supposed to be seen by the eyes, but it is actually revealed by the ears. So it is the guru who actually reveals the Dham to the disciple. Okay, and this is exactly what Mataji also experienced in presence of Prabhupada, that Prabhupada actually revealed to her a few glimpses of the Rasleela pastime also. Okay, so this is, yeah, so very amazing experience Mataji has got. Okay, any comment or question? Okay, next.
Brahmananda. In Montreal, there was a devotee, Dayananda Gai, who was a yogi and was also into health. He strongly criticized our diet, white rice, white sugar, butter, and said that we should eat brown rice, natural sugar, and no butter. At that time, Prabhupada was in Montreal, and his apartment was a few blocks from the temple. Since the devotees didn't have a car, Prabhupada had to walk from his apartment to the temple. So, one day after class, I was walking next to Prabhupada back to his apartment while Dayal Nitai was complaining to Prabhupada about how our food was not healthy and how we were all going to get sick. Prabhupada stopped walking and said, "You see Brahmananda here? He's been eating this food for so long. Does he look sick?" But Dayal Nitai didn't get the message. Again, he went on about the health thing and the way foods are processed and how we should change our diet. We walked some more and Prabhupada finally stopped and said, "You know, our Brahmananda here is so healthy that he can kill you. If I just say he can kill you," I was shocked. What's Prabhupada doing? But I got ready. Then Dayal Nitai understood that Prasadam was okay.
Okay. Very important principle we should always remember, because sometimes devotees, they are, you know, they go to some extreme of emphasizing only certain food or certain like raw food or, you know, organic food. They, many times this is happening. It has become a trend now. So this was also happening during Prabhupada's time, and Prabhupada made it very clear that whatever is offered to Krishna is prasadam, and if you eat prasadam, then you are okay. Okay, and there was another article, another experience of a devotee, another realization in the similar way, where that devotee was actually, asking Prabhupada about brown sugar and all that, following a raw diet and all. And Prabhupada told him also that if it is prasadam, it is okay. And he also mentioned, you have to give Krishna, you have to offer Krishna what he likes, okay, not what we want to offer to him. So, the devotees who are not following, this very strictly, or who are not having a very organic type of diet, then they should not be criticized, or neither they should be, you know, if they are having prasad. So prasadam is actually the most important thing. Because now see, what is the principle here? Why Prabhupada is saying, or why is insisting that prasadam is okay? Okay, and obviously Prabhupada is giving a live example that Brahmananda is still here. See, what to speak of devotee examples? There are even non-devotee examples who are having alcohol, who are having drugs, or who may be having various intoxications, and still they are in a normal health, in a good health. So what does that indicate? We cannot become fanatics in the name of having a particular diet. So devotees, they have to definitely, you know, according to their particular situation, according to their health constraints and restrictions, they can have a diet for themselves. But they cannot emphasize too much that this is what we are supposed to have. Or, you know, if someone is a doctor, Ayurvedic doctor or homeopathic doctor, they cannot keep emphasizing all the devotees that don't have this, don't have that. Because ultimately the principle is whatever Krishna likes, that we have to offer. Okay. And now the question is that, why is that not a concern? Why we can actually have prasadam, and which means that we can have anything. Why Prabhupada is clearly saying that prasadam is okay? What is the conception here?
Conception here is prasadam is the Lord's mercy, but is that your question, or the Lord's mercy is always...
See, what is the goal of devotees to emphasize on having a particular diet, or maybe any other doctors also who are devotee doctors, they are also probably emphasizing to have a particular diet. What is the goal of that?
Health.
Health, right. And how does health remain intact? How does it remain? How do you maintain your health, basically?
By practicing, I don't know, by moderating your lifestyle.
Health, yeah, by regulating your lifestyle, basically, right?
Regulating your
lifestyle. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
See, basically, okay, what is the consequence of bad health?
Okay.
What is the consequence of having a poor health?
Your devotional practices will be affected.
I'm not saying. What is, I'm asking about the cause of poor health. The cause of poor health.
Diet,
okay.
Irregular, yeah, irregulated.
Any
bad
other thing
lifestyle.
Apart from
lifestyle.
Diet? Okay, irregulated lifestyle. Imbalancing?
Dosha or cough. With
Vayu,
all that stuff.
Okay, with whatever it is, yeah, okay. Okay, so anything apart from this?
Lack of exercise.
Oh, okay. Overindulgence also.
Okay. Anything else?
Not sleeping properly, not having a bad lifestyle.
Bad, okay, yeah, it again comes to lifestyle. Okay, so see, I am really surprised that none of the devotees, they have actually given the ultimate cause of poor health or bad health.
Karma, bad karma.
Karma.
Bad
it's
karma.
So simple. Okay, so see, now that is the ultimate cause, we know that. Okay, I'm not saying that other factors, definitely whatever you have answered, these other factors are also responsible. They are equally important. I mean, you know, because we know that if you want to practice spiritual life, then we have to keep our health stable. Okay, we should have good health. So we avoid things that are not favorable for us. Okay, that is true. We take precautions accordingly. But we have to also remember that finally, it is my own karma which is going to cause me trouble. Okay, and on that basis, Prabhupada is saying prasadam is okay. Because who is nullifying the karma? What is the meaning of prasadam? You are eating prasadam, so much karma is nullified through that. It is Krishna's mercy, basically, right? So when you are having prasadam, lot of karma is also nullified. It is taken away by the Lord. Okay, so we are not supposed to be fanatics when we are emphasizing a particular diet, and depending on devotee's particular lifestyle, they have a particular diet, you know, which is favorable for them, and that's fine. You know, they personally they can follow that particular diet, but they cannot emphasize or they cannot try to convince others that this is actually the best diet, because everyone has their karma. Now, I will also tell another thing, that what may work for an individual, you know, in terms of following Ayurveda treatment, or it may be a homeopathic treatment or any other treatment, it may not work for another individual, because their requirement, bodily requirement, is different. And so it's not necessary that Ayurveda can, and Prabhupada also said that Ayurveda is actually, it is preventative, it is not curative. Okay, so if you just emphasize on a certain aspect of health, then we have to always remember one thing, that ultimately health is also dependent on Krishna's mercy finally. Karma, because he is the one who is going to take the karma. So, okay, so eating prasadam is actually definitely much more beneficial than having your own diet which is not offered to the Lord. So, you know, it will have that effect. I mean, you know, we must have that faith, and we must know that. At least we must know that. Even if you are not able to have that prasadam because of your health conditions, but we must have the faith that this prasadam is definitely more potent than any other ordinary food. So that is the reason, you know, it will actually destroy karma. But other things, they will not destroy karma if it is not offered to the Lord. And another aspect is that you offer to Krishna what he likes to eat. So if you are in that mood, then definitely the prasadam will have more potency. It will have more effect. Okay, so in that context, Prabhupada meant that Brahmananda is, you know, nothing is happening to him. He is completely all right. Okay, and so health is a, you know, concern, and health can deteriorate because of other factors also. It is not that just by maintaining a regular diet or just by having limited or restricted items, one will be able to have a very good health. Health can deteriorate later also. Or the reason for one's health can, you know, it can be multiple source. So even if you have, like, you know, for example, if I have a balanced diet and I have a regulated lifestyle also, but still unexpectedly some disease or some problem will come to me. Okay, and I have to suffer, I have to bear it. There is no escape from that. I mean, that is to be accepted as our own karma. So ultimately, you know, we are actually facing our own karma. Right? Okay, so is that clear? Any comments on this?
Slightly different comment.
Okay.
Can you hear me? I have one something to say. So I think there is some mixing of this idea of healthy eating with also the way we preach, the people we are targeting. So nowadays you see there is a fad, there is a fashion of eating healthy, eating natural food, as you're saying. So that's like using, it can be a hook for our preaching to that that population, that target audience. Okay, that we have very healthy eating. Okay, so I'm just saying, like, yes, as you say, the principle is that prasadam is going to destroy karma. Prasadam is purifying, but also it helps, you know, propagating it in this way that, okay, see, Hare Krishna, like, as Hare Krishna, we have such healthy food. Okay, but the moment commoners to whom we are preaching, they see, okay, oh, but what is there in the food? White sugar, polished rice, all that. But then it helps. So I'm saying that the absolute principle is that, but I think it helps to reach out to people, especially in the Western world, to show that, okay, see how this diet is really both physically, material, physical level, as well as from the health, like strictly health, physical health point of view, and also spiritual point of view. So that way it's actually useful if you know that is the objective. But I agree that prasadam is anything that is any offering that is made to Krishna with love. Krishna is saying that he accepts it and he gives us his mercy. So that's one additional thought that I have, because I see that here in the West more. That is it. But thinking that, as you're saying, that this is the way to go, that this is the diet you should have, not that. That is not the right mindset.
Yeah. Okay. So it's a good point. In fact, I would like to also add a couple of points in this, because in my experience also, I would like to share something. And if other devotees they want, they can also share. The point about catering to the outsiders. Yeah, I mean, you know, when it comes to preaching, then definitely we can adjust according to time, place, circumstance, and that's why you see in Krishna house also, the prasadam that is cooked for distributing on campus, that is purely sattvic, and it is according to the type of people that they are catering to. Now, obviously, most of them are US people, so you know, they cannot have chili and they cannot eat spicy stuff. So you will see that, okay, there is a lot of prasadam which is oriented towards that kind of cuisine. Okay. You cannot serve prasadam which is with spices, especially in the Western world. No one can eat it. So definitely when it comes to preaching, we have to adjust that principle. And we can also incorporate the health factors, that what advantages it will have. But one thing we see when they are distributing in Krishna house, the most important principle is grounded, which is, you know, when the van is going from the Krishna house to the campus, you know, it is clearly mentioned on the van, karma free food. Okay, so yeah. That principle is definitely there. It is a food which is free from karma, and I think that also attracts a lot of people. But I've also noticed one thing, that if you go to different regions, different countries, the people will actually definitely have the cooking style according to their culture. For example, you know, if you go to Gujarat, or if you go to a Gujarati's house, then they will have more of sweet stuff mixed in everything. If you go to a Maharashtrian's house, then they will have more spices added in everything. And if you go to South Indian's house, they might have more of rasam and sambar, or, you know, rice, you know, kind of. So according to culture, according to place, the cuisine will definitely vary. And I think it is important for the devotees to balance that out, because, you know, Krishna also says that food in the more, you know, which is very spicy, which is very salty, which is very sour, it is all in the mode of passion and ignorance. I mean, it is mostly in the mode of passion. And so we have to definitely avoid it as devotees also. I mean, it should be in the mode of goodness practically. But depending on, now if you personally consider the example of Srila Prabhupada, he was very choosy about what he wants to eat. And he never gave up on eating. You know, whenever he was asked to eat raw food because of his health, he said that, I will die, but I will not eat this kind of food. You know, because food is something that Prabhupada actually really, he was always enthusiastic about having the proper food, proper diet for him. And he always recommended that we should have dal, chapati, sabji, roti. Dal, chapati, sabji, rice, you know, the main course should have these things. He wanted to establish this in all the temples. Okay, so it's a individual and a personal thing. Devotees definitely, they have to take care of their health, and according to that they have to filter down certain items. They can have restrictions, but we have to always remember that we can definitely respect prasadam by consuming at least in few quantity, just to respect it. Okay, so we are not able to consume a lot of quantity of the, you know, particular items, but at least we can respect it by having in lesser quantities. So that way we can actually appreciate the fact that this is prasadam. So it will be okay. And I think okay. So one more point I wanted to add is that if you see in the past, the culture in India, people were doing everything on their own. And it did not matter to them what they are eating, because they could digest any kind of food. Because they were doing a lot of exercise, or you can say they were doing a lot of physical activities that time. And that, you know, we see that especially the older people, they are very strong. They have a lot of stamina. Physically, they are very active till now. I mean, our generation, we are quite behind them, like maybe by many years. So what they are able to do in the age of 60, 70, I think will be done with the age of 50. Okay, because our capacity is actually becoming lesser and lesser compared to their stamina. So we see that during the olden days in India, because they were doing a lot of physical activities, they always remained fit. And they could consume any kind of food. But now the problem is that everyone who is working, most of the people who are working, mostly they are sitting and they are working. There is no physical exercise. There is no time for exercise. We are not doing any physical activity. We are just sitting on the computer and we are just working. So what is the natural outcome of that? So if you start eating all these things, it will create problems in the future. Okay. Whereas in the earlier days, people can, they were able to digest it because they were doing a lot of physical activities. Okay. So with technology, things have deteriorated people's health because, you know, people have become lazy. And because, you know, I am mentioning this point since you mentioned about people are becoming health conscious. But what is the reason of that? Why people are becoming health conscious? Because they can see that they are suffering. In an early age, they are suffering. And what is the cause of suffering? Cause of suffering is because they are lazy. They are not, they are stressed out. They are in anxiety. There is competition. And, you know, you are working mostly from your comfort zone. Okay, so all these factors, they are responsible for the deterioration of the health. And this is what people see, that, you know, I am eating so much and now I am suffering. So then again, you know, that restriction will automatically come on certain items. It's a natural consequence of our laziness. Okay, so then people will start diverting to this, you know, raw food and healthy food and all that. But otherwise, earlier people used to eat junk food also, and they were absolutely fine with that. So yeah, so in this way, you know, you see the other factors also, they are playing important role. By, you know, as Nirvika was mentioning, that we are not exercising and we don't have a regulative schedule also, lifestyle. So these are the main causes of creating suffering. I mean, you know, one of the most important reasons why people are suffering health-wise. But the ultimate reason is karma. You know, karma is definitely there. So I think it is also, you know, the problem is also overeating. Many people, they are also overeating, you know, and that is also causing a lot of problems. And they are not exercising. They are not doing physical activities after that. So that is obviously a reason. Now, so I think even if certain items or, you know, certain foodstuffs, they are not favorable for our health, but if they are prasadam, then we can just respect it by taking lesser quantity and we can at least appreciate that it's prasadam. So that way we can actually also destroy karma. So any devotional activity can actually destroy karma, right?
One follow-up question here. Okay, this statement, okay, all prasadam is not created equally. Okay, it's not from any books or, but I heard someone saying this, and what they were essentially trying to convey is that prasadam, the way it is cooked and offered, will vary greatly, right? As you were saying, the temple worship and household worship is heaven and hell differences there, although we may be offering in the same way. Okay, so somewhere in some household, the standard may be not as pristine as in a temple. So is that a true statement? Does it really make a difference if whatever is being cooked is offered with love to the Lord? I know that degree of love is going to vary. So how effective can prasadam, like, you know, the way prasadam is made, different, are there different grades like that? You understand what I'm asking? Like, how can all prasadam, whether temple or...
Yeah, I mean, see, that is just not prasadam only, but even other activities of devotional service. Like, for example, it is mentioned in the Shastra that if you hear from someone who is a Mayavadi or who is impure, then there will be no effect of that teaching or instructions. Okay, that is the reason we have to hear from someone who is pure coming in parampara, at least in parampara, sincerely following the instructions of the parampara, then they can actually so again it comes back to the purity is the force. And so it is not necessary that each and every devotee, they will, whoever is making prasadam will be on the equal level. Definitely there will be gradation, because the consciousness, the bhav, everything goes into the prasadam. And obviously the overall lifestyle also, it also can make an important contribution. So we are not just talking about, see, I think we have to understand one thing, that devotional service or any particular limb of bhakti, it is not it's not a time frame. It's basically what we can say is that it is not limited to a particular time when you are doing that devotional activity. It includes your overall lifestyle and your bhava throughout your life, throughout the day, throughout number of months, throughout the number of years. And so if you are pure for the most time of your life in Krishna consciousness, then the effect will be pure, definitely. It does not mean that, okay, when you are cooking, that time only you focus on cooking and you have to be pure that time. And then rest of the other times, you can do whatever you want to do. And you are not even conscious of what you want to do. So the absorption in Krishna consciousness will definitely matter a lot. You know, what you are doing in your daily schedule on a daily basis for months, for years, that will actually show up in the purity. And many devotees, they have this question about how to chant the holy name attentively, or how to chant purely, or how to chant nicely. Okay, but the problem with this question is that why are we questioning how can we chant purely or nicely or attentively? Actually, we should question ourselves that how much we are willing to change ourselves so that we can actually chant purely, nicely, in the proper spirit. How we are able to transform ourselves, because that is the most influential part in any limb of bhakti. That will play a very dominant role. So the consciousness is actually a result of our efforts from the beginning. The absorption is also a result of that. It is not just a time-focused period where you just, okay, you are sitting down for chanting the holy name 16 rounds. Now I will focus attentively so that I can chant attentively. It does not mean that Krishna will reveal to you. So even if you spend that 2 hours trying to chant attentively, but then rest of the day if you are inattentive, then obviously what you are doing is not a very great sacrifice. So the lifestyle will actually influence your consciousness also, and it will also play a very important role. So different devotees, they are at different consciousness levels, or they are at different advancement levels, or at purity levels, and that will also have effect on the potency of the prasadam. Okay. Yeah. Yes. And
so it will not all be equally effective, right? So someone who is
of course, no,
very pure in their consciousness.
Yeah, I mean, but definitely, if Prabhupada prepares. Even,
right. Yeah.
Yeah. So.
Go ahead.
So if Prabhupada will prepare something and we prepare something, there is a huge ocean of vast ocean difference. We cannot compare to what the pure devotees, their consciousness is. When Prabhupada gives someone, I will also relate another pastime of Prabhupada here. That one time devotees or Prabhupada disciples, they were cooking. I think they were cooking for a feast or something. And what happened is that they were not able to get enough time to offer to the Lord, because the people who came for the feast, I think they were leaving. And somehow, so after the feast, they were leaving. And so this disciple, he was still cooking. And they did not have time to offer to the Lord. And because the purpose of prasadam is to distribute it to the people, right? Whoever is coming, it should be distributed. Otherwise, what is the use of making so much prasadam? So we are making it for others only. And so this disciple, he got very anxious, because Prabhupada had very clearly instructed that not a single person should leave without having prasadam. Okay. And so he got really anxious, and then in that anxiety he went to Prabhupada and he told him that, "Prabhupada, actually people are leaving and we don't have time so much. So I apologize, I'm sorry that I'm not able to offer. We don't have so much time, what should I do?" So then Prabhupada, you know what he did? Actually he was going to offer to the Lord. So he had a covered cloth, cloth which he covered on the prasadam, and he was just going to go to the altar and he was going to offer it. But he also expressed this, anxiety to Prabhupada. So Prabhupada, what he did, he just removed the cloth and he just glanced at the prasadam, and then he said, "Now go and distribute." So this disciple was sharing that how by Prabhupada glance, Krishna actually accepted everything right at that moment. So technically speaking, when a pure devotee is dealing, he does not even have to offer, because he can just distribute it. As soon as he prepares, he can actually distribute it, because Krishna will instantly take everything, whatever the pure devotee will cook. So this is one of the examples of how Prabhupada actually distributed, like without even offering to the Lord. So just by Prabhupada's glance, it was accepted by the Lord. Okay, another example is when one time Prabhupada actually said that because one devotee, so they went to the house of a person, he was a materialistic person, and they were offering food to the devotees. It was not offered, definitely not offered. So they were serving food to the devotees, and later on, one of the disciples asked Prabhupada that, "Prabhupada, I assume that this food was not even cooked. Okay, so how did we take it?" And so then Prabhupada said that actually everything is prasadam of the Lord. Everything in the material world is prasadam of the Lord. So if we have that consciousness, then we can actually understand that it is all remnants of the Lord's mercy. But Prabhupada said that, "I don't preach this or I don't teach this to you all, because then it will be a common practice and standard that you can also, without offering to the Lord, you will start distributing or you will eat without offering. For your purification, for your benefit, I am asking you to offer." So see, again, the principle is that all these external things that we are doing, these are all connected to Vidhi Marg, or these are regulative principles and which are meant for our purification and benefit. Okay, but whenever the devotee is, he is in touch with Krishna, then he does not even have to offer or does not even have to undergo all these formalities. Whatever they prepare is immediately accepted by the Lord, because the entire bhav is to satisfy Krishna. See, right from the beginning of the life of a devotee to the end of the life, the entire bhav is actually to please the Lord. So the pure devotee can never displease the Lord or never desire that he does not want to offer the Lord. It's not possible. Right? So that way, Krishna will accept it. Okay, but we have to follow all these strictly.
So that means, suppose someone is not available, not able to go to the temple to take prasadam, they are still preparing at home. Does it mean that the offering that they're making, that is not destroying karma? Like, say for someone who is
no
neophyte or whose consciousness is very shaky, that kind of person, still tries to prepare, or not very congenial at, you know, to prepare prasadam at home, but still they're trying, you know, making it a point every time to offer before having. So that the offering that they are accepting, is it not destroying, or is it like it's not destroying karma at the same rate as it would say in a temple where people, where devotees with a very high level of consciousness, or who are very with a high level of Krishna consciousness, are preparing.
I mean, of course that will matter, and according to the degree the devotee is advanced, that degree the potency will be also there, will be present there. But at least on a mechanical level, so this is the same as whether, you know, chanting destroys karma or not. You know, so now obviously we talk about different types of chanting. So there are offensive chanting, there is namabhas, offenseless chanting, and there is the shudhanam, pure chanting. So depending on the level of chanter, whoever is fitting in these three categories, the result he will get accordingly. Okay, so if you are committing offenses while preparing prasadam, then what, you are prasadam apradi, you know, and then you are namabhas prasadi, like that, or prasadabhas devotee, like that, or then you are pure prasadi. So depending on the consciousness,
so one thing is there,
definitely. Yeah.
So another point that came to mind today, I'm just, you know, I devotees, I'm very sorry. If anyone has any questions, please ask. But these questions I have had in my mind for a long time. So I'm asking this. So before offering, or during offering, we first offer to Prabhupada. We first offer to Guru Parampara, then Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and then Krishna. So that offering prayer, does that also have a purifying effect? Like when we chant the Panchatattva Mantra, which I'm not sure if Prabhupada had recommended that in between rounds. And we say that we are trying to purify ourselves, like, so that we know we are committing offenses, we are praying to Panchatattva so that they can pardon us, very mercifully pardon us. So like that, does that have a bearing on the extent to which the prasadam can purify us? Although we may not be very pure in our consciousness.
Yeah, so see, that is the reason we have the offering of Tulsi Maharani also, along with the, you know, plate of prasadam. We are supposed to offer Tulsi, and that will compensate basically our conditioning, our anarthas, in the sense that at least the Lord will accept it, basically. That the, you know, principle is that the Lord will accept it by the mercy of Tulsi Maharani and by the mercy of our spiritual master in the parampara. The Lord will accept it. If we were to if we were to offer directly to the Lord, then maybe the Lord will not accept it. At the beginning stage itself, it might be rejected. Okay, so we put Tulsi Maharani, and then we also offer, we pray and request our Guru Jan to offer to the Lord. And because of their prayers, the Lord will accept it finally. Now obviously, it also would depend on our consciousness efforts. One principle is that the spiritual master cannot offer anything to Krishna which is impure or which is not of good quality. That is also another principle. So we have to make sure that at least we are meeting those requirements. We are offering the best quality to the Lord, and as far as possible with devotion. Devotion is the main element. With that kind of bhav and devotion, we are offering to the Lord. And then obviously we also take the help of the mercy of Guru and Tulsi. Right? Like that. So it's a combined this thing. Because we are not purified yet, we are not very advanced, we have to take mercy, we have to take shelter of, we have to take help of pure devotees.
Pure devotees, yeah.
But it, you know, now again, what you offer to the Lord and what Prabhupada will offer to the Lord, that definitely it will have difference. So the difference will be in the potency, and you know, to that degree the karma and the potency will be bestowed. Okay, so this is very important.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, so okay, so is that okay now? Any further questions on this? Any other devotees, they have any comment or question?
No problem.
Okay, can you continue the next article?
Okay, just 1 minute. Okay, yeah. Vishnu Gada. When Bhavananda was president of the New York Temple, he initiated an all-night Harinam Sankirtan party on Broadway. After being out all night, the devotees came back, attended Mangalarti and then rested. To facilitate this schedule, Mangalarti was offered at 3:45 a.m. instead of the usual 4:30 a.m. And we had to wake up the deities earlier also. Then when Prabhupada came, he greeted the deities, looked at them for some time, and then spoke with Bhavananda. We were wondering, what's Prabhupada saying? Later we found out that Prabhupada said, Krishna looks tired. All day he plays with the coward boys. He needs proper rest. Prabhupada had just arrived, and I don't think anybody had told him about the all-night Harinam Sankirtan party, which was a little questionable anyway. After that, we moved Mangalarti back to 4:30 a.m.
Yeah, here also we can see from this pastime how Prabhupada actually was connected intimately with Krishna, and he understood by seeing the deities that Krishna is tired. And there is another example, I think I have shared this article also, later I think we'll come across it, but where Prabhupada actually sees Krishna and then he goes to the devotee and he tells him, okay, so basically it is Sachinandan Maharaj who is sharing this pastime, and he says that one, you know, his service was basically to clean all the prasadam plates and the utensils, and then, you know, he used to give those plates and prasad to the pujari who used to offer it to the Lord. So when Prabhupada saw the deity, you know, he just told this pujari or someone, some other devotee, that Krishna has told me that the utensils are not clean, they are not first class, and so it should be very thoroughly be cleaned. So this message was passed to Sachinandan Maharaj, and he was, you know, like, what would happen to you if something like this happened, right? You will be in a state of completely, you know, shock, because this is how Prabhupada actually connected intimately with Krishna. He spoke with Krishna, and I mean to say the deities, no? Because he saw the Lord present in the deity. You know, he was not seeing the external form of the deity, he was actually seeing Krishna directly. So Prabhupada knew just by looking at the deities, or he used to also get answers from the deities. The deities used to talk to Prabhupada, and Prabhupada communicated with his disciples. Okay, and so here also, no one actually informed Prabhupada that all these utensils were, you know, they were not cleaned properly. But somehow Prabhupada knew it. So in the same way, here Prabhupada actually understood Krishna is tired. It's an amazing pastime. Okay. Any comments? Yeah, next.
Rajendra Nandan. The pure devotee is not under the influence of the modes of material nature. When he sleeps, the pure devotee is not in ignorance, but is engaged in Krishna service. One morning, when Srila Prabhupada woke up, Kamalkrishna Maharaj helped him rise, and Prabhupada immediately began preaching enthusiastically. With a loud voice, he said, "I want you to go to the West and preach. Ask people, do you want to grow old? No, you are forced to grow old. Do you think I want to get old? Nobody wants to grow old. But this is the law of nature. You are forced. You must surrender to Krishna if you want to become free from birth, death, disease and old age." For Prabhupada to wake up and in one moment preach on the transcendental platform, it would seem that during his sleep he was meditating on how he wanted his disciples to carry on.
Yeah, so Prabhupada, even when he was sleeping, he was actually Krishna conscious. He was thinking about his services. So all these stages, higher stages, they are all possible when we advance in spiritual life, when we get absorbed in Krishna consciousness, or we get attached to the Lord to a great intensity, where even sleep is actually considered to be obstacles in our service to the Lord. Externally, maybe okay, it may be favorable for our health, but when someone is at the platform of bhava and prema, the sleeping becomes an obstacle, because actually the health is, you know, they are not actually concerned with the body. They are not focused on the body. They are completely unaware of the body, and they are only absorbed in serving Krishna. So they are ultimately, they are detached from the body. So here we see that Prabhupada was also completely detached from the body, and he was not concerned about, right from the beginning we have seen this, that Prabhupada was completely absorbed in his service, and he used to translate the books. He only slept for 3 hours every day, and that 3 hours also, maybe God knows what was happening. You know, maybe Prabhupada was in Samadhi that time, and he was having Krishna's association. So as we advance in spiritual life, all these habits that we have of sleeping. See, Prabhupada actually, what he suggested is very apt. Prabhupada said that, you know, he generally recommended devotees to sleep for 6 hours, not more than that. He always recommended 6 hours. And obviously, you know, in some circumstances he said that if devotees, they have some health issues or they require more sleep, then they can sleep for another hour or so. In fact, he suggested that devotees sleep for six hours and then they take rest for 1 hour in the afternoon. Okay, that is what he actually suggested. You see that in the external world, in the material world, the scientists or the doctors, they generally recommend that people, they should sleep for at least for 8 hours. Okay, minimum for 7 to 8 hours. But Prabhupada did not say like that. Prabhupada said 6 hours. And I think there is a very, one of the most important reason why Prabhupada said is basically, if you become more Krishna conscious, other things will be taken care of and automatically the sleep will reduce. And in spite of that less sleep, you will be healthy. So generally, these doctors, they recommend 7 hours or 8 hours of sleep for your healthy condition functioning of the body. Okay, but the more you become Krishna conscious, the more health-wise you become more, you become more detached from the body gradually, and health does not affect you so much. Okay, so it's very, you know, whatever Prabhupada said, you know, it had a deep meaning. So I think everyone will realize over a period of time that the more we get absorbed in Krishna consciousness, the more we want to sacrifice our sleep, because it's a waste of time for a devotee, unless the devotee is going in Samadhi and then he's associating with Chaitanya Mahaprabhu or, you know, Krishna directly, then definitely, you know, he can sleep for more hours. But if that is not happening, then definitely devotees will realize that it is an obstacle in our service. So 6 hours is actually more than enough. Okay, so any comments? Okay, next article.
Okay, so Prabhupada, after reading this, can some other devotee take up? I'll read this one, next one onwards. Okay?
Yeah.
Jagat Chakshu. Jagat Chakshu. Prabhupada called me. I went to him and paid my obeisances. He gave me Japamal. He gave me my Japamal and said, "Your name is Jagat Chakshudas." And he explained that my name meant that we should feel the eye of the Lord watching us. Then he looked straight in my eyes and pointing his finger, he said, "You cannot hide from the eyes of God." I thought, "Oh my God, I wanted the earth to open up, swallow me," because everybody was watching and thinking, maybe he did something wrong. Actually, before I was initiated, I used to steal mahasweets from the kitchen, hide and eat them. When Prabhupada told me what my name meant, I immediately felt caught. I felt that Prabhupada read my mind and knew everything about me. The next day, I came back from Sankirtan a little early and, forgetting what I was not supposed to, that I was not supposed to pass through Prabhupada's garden, I passed through it. Prabhupada was sitting on his rocking chair, chanting japa. I paid my obeisances and was going to go back when Prabhupada waved me over and asked, "Where have you been?" I said, "Prabhupada, I was distributing your books." We were very enthusiastic to distribute his books because we knew that Prabhupada was blessing all the people of Venezuela through his books. Prabhupada said, "How do the people in Venezuela like my books?" I said, "Prabhupada, the people here are simple but pious. As soon as they read these books, they like them and they want to buy more." Prabhupada moved his head, indicating that he was satisfied and said, "Come, I have to give you something." I followed him to his room, and on his table was a tray full of sweets. He gave me one and said, "Thank you very much for helping me." I was so moved that I was crying. I was a new devotee, yet Prabhupada gave me so much mercy. Then I thought, he's telling me that I don't have to steal sweets, that he will give them to me. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.
Yeah, so Prabhupada did manifest a lot of potency of the Lord. Because he was the Acharya, so he did manifest a lot of mystic potency. And definitely, you know, many devotees have shared this, that Prabhupada knew he could actually understand person's mind, and he gave exactly that medicine for him. So this is the meaning of transparent via media. And although Prabhupada is not God, but whenever Krishna wants, he can manifest the potency through Srila Prabhupada or through a guru or through a devotee. And, you know, so it does not mean that Prabhupada had all these potencies right from the beginning, or, you know, he was God, you know, because if we say that he had these potencies, then obviously we say that he is God, but he is definitely not God. Whenever the time came, he has manifested these mystic potencies because these were all given to him by Krishna. And this is also the meaning of Sakti Avesh. So Sakti Avesh basically means the Avesh, the Sakti is entering the body of the Lord. Okay, and that is actually a big thing. So the position of a Sakti Avesh Avatar is definitely superior to any of the other Acharyas also, because the Lord is personally entering the body of the pure devotee. And then he is able to manifest all these potencies. Okay, right? I mean, even if you consider without these mystic potencies being manifested, simply if you see the way Prabhupada spread Krishna consciousness, at what age, how, when, we can actually understand that it was not possible for any ordinary jiva to exhibit this kind of strength, this kind of shakti. So this is the reason why Bhakti Raksha Sridhar Maharaj, he gave Prabhupada the title Sakti Avesh Avatar. So definitely he is a empowered servant of the Lord. Okay, so I think we can just take another one and we can finish it off for the day. So because I think there is only one article, and then after some few articles, we can take it next time. Yeah, so Aritra, can you read the last one?
1 minute. I lost that. Please wait. Okay. Yes, yes. Rajendra Nandan, right? Rajendra Nandan. In the garden, we were reading the Sanskrit, the word-for-word translation, the verse and the purport from the first canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. When we read the word-for-word translation of the word Muni, it wasn't a noun. Muni means a thoughtful person, but it was a verb. Srila Prabhupada said, read that again. The devotee read it again, and Srila Prabhupada said, who has done this? Who has changed this? Who is that rascal? Some Prabhu's name was mentioned. And Prabhupada said, if you change one word of my books, it can ruin our movement. He was emphatic and heavy about this point. Not to be misunderstood, let me explain that I offer all respects to the devotees who Srila Prabhupada assigned as editors, like Dravida Prabhu. But my understanding is that we can't change the message of the spiritual master. There is a great danger in that. And I personally saw how Srila Prabhupada was fiery in making that point.
Yeah, so we have to be very careful if you want to change, you know, even one word of Prabhupada's books or any of his teachings can cause a lot of problem, you know, for the devotees. See, because here we are not dealing with the grammar of Prabhupada, we are not dealing with the words of ordinary person. Although the grammars, you know, the grammar may be a concern for people, and obviously Prabhupada wanted that editors should be there. See, one of the reasons Prabhupada wanted editors is that so that they can correct what Prabhupada has written. If somehow he has skipped certain things or if there is some grammatical mistake, he can fix it up. So that is the reason, you know, we had editors. Prabhupada approved of that. Right from his time, you know, they are editors. But it is also very important, especially when it comes to translation, that we have to be careful of how he is translating. And we cannot remove that. So we'll see throughout, I think it's a very common observation, throughout the translations of Prabhupada's purport, throughout the translation of Prabhupada in the scriptures like Bhagavad Gita, Srimad Bhagavatam, CC, or wherever he has translated from Sanskrit to English, we'll see that Prabhupada has added his own words also. It's not that he has just given the word-to-word synonym, but he has also added his own words. Like, there are many, in fact, what to speak of word, there are sentences that Prabhupada has added in the translations, which are originally not there in the text also. So like that, Prabhupada has added a lot of things. But somehow his main intention is that everything should be connected to Krishna, and I think that is the main reason why Prabhupada added all these additional statements. If you read the word-to-word translation, the synonyms, and then you see the translation, you will actually be, in fact, okay, even when he is translating a word, just the word from Sanskrit to English, if you see the synonyms, you'll see that sometimes Prabhupada is writing, he's adding certain things to explain that particular word, maybe in that particular context of that verse. And when he's translating the entire sloka into English, then also Prabhupada is actually adding sentences. So when you read Prabhupada's books, you can just make this observation. Okay, I think you will be able to understand how Prabhupada has done it. So it's not there in the original text, but Prabhupada has translated like that. And this is one of the reasons why Prabhupada was so concerned about changing anything. Okay, and Prabhupada also said that, you know, this purports, his purports or his books are his personal ecstasies. So he has expressed those in the form of his additional statements that he has presented. Okay. Okay, so any question on this? Okay.
It's a very vast topic, right? This changing of Prabhupada's books is a very vast topic. Jayadvaita Maharaj has written a book also on this, changing the unchangeable truth. He's one of the principal editors.
It's a big thing actually. It's not so easy. Jayadvaita Maharaj, I am not sure what book he has written, but he has definitely presented a paper on that. I don't know the name of the book. I'm not sure about the book, but he has presented a paper on that, elaborate paper, which is available, I think, on his website.
Yeah, it's there on the website. I had mentioned that. Yeah. It's called the unchangeable edit, changing the unchangeable.
Right. Yeah, so he has explained the reasons why he has changed certain words and like that, or why he has corrected certain things.
Can I share that link in the group?
Yeah, definitely, sure. In fact, it's such a critical service that he has been criticized by many Prabhupada disciples also who are not in ISKCON and maybe who are also in ISKCON. So, it's a big task and we have to be very careful about it. Okay. Okay, so any other comment? Any other devotees, they have any comment or question on this? Okay, so just wanted to again announce that His Holiness Giriraj Maharaj is going to be part of our Sangha coming month in June. And so we'll just keep you updated. And hopefully all the devotees can attend. And you can also invite others to attend. But I think when it comes to question and answer, I think we let's restrict that to our group. Because obviously there'll be, if there are like 50 or more devotees, then we'll lose the chance. So I think Aritra, you have to like just test and you have to just coordinate. We'll be in touch about this and
we'll make sure that.
So hopefully looking forward to the association of His Holiness Giriraj Maharaj next month. 13th or 14th. Jai. Okay, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Thank you all the devotees for joining. Hare Krishna, Dhanvat Pranam.
Dhanvat Krishna.
Hare Krishna Prabhu.